Well, welcome to week number 47. This is the podcast that's based upon the newsletter that both Dawn Riddler and myself, Kirby Lakhranji, write on a weekly basis. We look at anything from politics, we look at economies, we look at the world, we look at South Africa, and anything that might have caught our eyes. Sometimes a little bit controversial, sometimes not. But you are welcome to listen to this podcast and let us know your thoughts. Quickly approaching the end of the year, that means there's Black Friday. Just gone through that. We're going to touch on that. Inflation numbers out in South Africa. Bullish, bearish sentiment. And then I'm going to be speaking about a gentleman called Javier Milei. He is the soon-to-be president of Argentina, and he's got some interesting parallels as far as South Africa is concerned. Now, just before we start, Dawn, here are the markets. The S&P 500 for the week was up 1%. The NASDAQ was up 0.89%. Small caps in the US up 0.43%. And then if we go across to the Euro Stoxx 50 that we talk about on a weekly basis, that was up by 0.74%. Dawn, all these indices year to date are actually not too bad. The Euro Stoxx 50 is up 15%. S&P 500 is an example, is up 18%, and the NASDAQ is up 36% so far year to date. Currencies, South Africa, we write about that in the newsletter. South Africa versus the US dollar is at 1878 and against the euro at 2054. If you are a Bitcoin fanatic, that is now at $37,418. That's been a fairly large riser as far as a currency is concerned this year alone. Very large increase in Bitcoin. Cardano, which is ADA, that's at 38 cents to the US dollar. Bonds, pretty stable for the week. The US 2 years only up 1%, whereas if you look at the longer dated bonds, those are slightly down 0.58% and 0.39%. And then if we just look across the indices again, Dawn, equally weighted index on the S&P 500, that's up 4% for the year. Spoke about a little bit earlier that year to date, the S&P 500 is actually up 18%. And that just shows you this major, major influence that the big artificial intelligence stocks has had and the impact that they've actually had on the total market. That's the markets in a nutshell. Dawn, quite interesting. You write this week and you actually show bullish and bearish sentiments. And this is where there's obviously a survey that gets taken and there's a survey that and people get asked, are you bullish or bearish about markets? They get compiled and it actually shows the movement of that bullish and bearish sentiment amongst investors relative to the S&P 500. If you haven't seen it, head to the newsletter and you'll be able to see what we're actually talking about. But that was quite an interesting study, right, Dawn?
Absolutely, Kirby. You know, we often talk about behavioral finance, and this is behavioral finance. It's what people feel. And we're inclined to think our markets are based on fact, it's based on reality, it's based on how companies are performing. It isn't. It is based on what an investor's perception is of a share that they buy at a particular point in time. Because they make that physical choice, I'm going to buy the share at this point. Even if it's a bot that is buying it, and you know, there are more and more of these automatic buying systems, somebody will have told the bot at which point to buy that share. It, you know, artificial intelligence is not in that game just yet. So it's really interesting to have a look and see what sentiment it is like. You can see it's over a fairly long period of time. But what I found quite interesting is the long spell of bearishness that has pervaded since 2015, with small little uplifts in bullish. But really, there's a solid block of bearish sentiment in there.
I mean, it's interesting because if you actually have a look at it, prior to 2015, most times people are, or investors are, bullish. And there are interludes of bearishness, but mostly they are bullish. But from 2015 onwards, there's these vast periods where a lot of people are bearish with these interludes, very small little interludes where people become bullish or investors become bullish. Now, it's interesting because actually at the end of 2015, the market was trading at circa 2000. I'm talking about the S&P 500 now. That saw almost a doubling or saw more than a doubling in the S&P 500 until 2023. And that's interesting because the market has doubled despite the fact that you might have been sitting listening to popular dinner time conversation amongst individuals and people saying to you, listen, the market's about to crash, the market's about to crash. But yet the market might have gone through interludes of volatility, I mean, we saw the COVID crisis during that period. We obviously now saw this inflation crisis playing itself out, but markets generally have just continued to increase in value. And that again, you know, speaks to the point of being trying to be invested over long periods of time. It ends up being the best thing for capital.
And I think what this also shows, Kobe, is that emotions aren't the best gauge for an investor. For the majority, it's probably best to take emotion out of that equation, which is the job that you do, where you base your buying or share not on what you think or what you feel, but based on technical research and these kind of things in terms of what shares to buy. Really, if you want to do this seriously, is and the best way to take emotion out of it is to get somebody else to do it for you rather than trying to do it yourself. Because this shows you, you know, if you have a bearish sentiment, as an individual, you're not going to be buying into the market. You're going to be looking to diversify and you're going to miss out on those opportunities. You're going to have missed out on the doubling of potentially doubling of your portfolio.
It's interesting, Dawn, because, you know, yesterday I was sitting at a good family friend's home and there was a very recent matriculant. So somebody that's just finished matric sitting and chatting to all of us about her life and what she potentially wants to do going forward for the next 2, 3, 4, and 5 years. And she said to us that her biggest fear is making a mistake. She said, I'm petrified of making a mistake. What happens if I choose something today? And quite frankly, it's the wrong decision. And I just can't live with the fact that I could make a wrong decision. So therefore, I'm almost incapacitated to try and make a decision because I just don't know what decision to make. And people were giving advice and then I got involved and I said to her, if you didn't make mistakes, there'd be something wrong. I said to her, life is about making mistakes, learning from them, and being able to recover from them so that you can become better at what you do. And in today's world, we need a multitude of different skill sets that we weave together in order to create something that becomes valuable to humanity, quite frankly. That's how we make a living, ultimately. But it is this weave of different experiences that make us who we are at the end of the day. And I just thought it was very, very interesting because it's interesting when you kind of exit at 18, you now have to face this choice of a career. But that's not actually what it is. As I said to this individual, there's very few people that know exactly what they want to do, you know, when they kind of get to 18. Most of those people are people that are going to kind of in the professional services, you know, becoming an actuary, as an example, or a doctor, for instance. You know, doctors know, many doctors I've spoken to have known that they wanted to be doctors, you know, from that they were kids. But most of us need to go and find what that thing is. And that isn't a career necessarily. It's experiences that make us into something. Hopefully I left her with at least not the fear to make a mistake.
Bobby, I think this reminds me of a conversation I had recently about the importance when you're coming into retirement of finding the next thing, right? Yeah. And that needn't necessarily bring in money. It can bring in money. But if you get to retirement and you don't have anything that is going to occupy your time significantly, part of your time, and that you really enjoy it, going into the next 20, 30 years, it's going to be a very frustrating retirement. And so this learning journey, I mean, I did it myself. I started off as a botanist and I was junior lecturer and then I did an MBA and then I went into corporate and I was in marketing and then eventually ended up where I am here, and I'm hopefully I'm
stopped. Yeah, that is the weave of these different experiences. And this is, in the same token, I say to individuals, I spoke to an individual, you know, in the last 2 weeks who wants to try and get into trading money. And I said to them, okay, so you're interested in trading. I said, do you know the 10,000 hour rule? The 10,000 hour rule states that you need to spend 10,000 hours busy at something until such a time that you've learned a skill and you've become superior at being able to do something that is better than the average individual. Now, the 10,000 hour rule has been proven across the world. I said, okay, take the 10,000 hour rule and think about what you're trying to do in trading. Firstly, are you prepared to make the mistakes? That's the first thing. Are you prepared to lose money? That's the second thing. What are you going to be doing if you do lose money? And what is the emotional response going to be? And how are you going to learn from that? I said, once you've understood the framework of what you're trying to do, by all means, go spend 10,000 hours. But without spending the time, you will never be good at trading or investing or doing anything, quite frankly, playing the cello, whatever it is that you want to do, you have to spend the 10,000 hours. And once people start thinking about that, well, people start saying, but actually, I thought this would be a quick buck. And it's not a quick buck. You know, if it was such a quick buck trading money, everybody would be billionaires out of trading money. And the reality is that most guys that are good at this are people that have spent 10,000 hours understanding what it is that needs to happen.
Yes, Kobe, you make an extremely good point there. And the thing is that if you add up all the hours that you've got in your lifetime, you can do those 10,000 hours multiple times. It doesn't just have to be one thing.
Absolutely. So that's where, you know, I always say to people, be inquisitive. Be inquisitive. Look at the world in front of you. What interests you? You know, where is it that you think your life could go? Find areas that you find that you're inquisitive about and start reading about it. You know, just educate yourself, you know, and then you're either going to feel the need to go deeper, and that's absolutely fine, or you're going to feel the need that, okay, listen, this is actually not my thing. That's the experiences we're talking about. Dawn, the other experience that I think a lot of people have been going through is Black Friday. Lots and lots of shopping going on. We'll see some numbers coming out. Have you seen some numbers for Black Friday yet?
Not yet. You know, I think most of them were, you know, tomorrow, Monday, when most of you are listening to this, is Cyber Monday, which is sort of a continuation of Black Friday.
Yes.
So to all intents and purposes, Black Friday is not over. I don't think it's really going to be over until the end of November. So we probably in the first week in December, we'll start to see those retail figures. But there's absolutely no doubt that during COVID and post-COVID, consumer patterns of spending and purchasing have changed. And so much more is going online. People are getting wise also to the so-called bargains that you get out there. And there was actually, I was watching an extremely interesting little reel or one of these things where there's an app that you can actually plug into Amazon, I think it is. And you can see what the pattern of the price of that item has been over time. And it is absolutely fascinating because this guy was shopping from sort of, you know, some of the most popular things and that. And you can see that coming up in June, July, they start putting the prices up only to bring them down in October. Yes. And an interesting little aside, you know, that I have picked up, that the most popular item in South Africa that was bought on Black Friday were air fryers.
How's that?
There you go. Makes a lot of sense. You know, they consume a hell of a lot less electricity than an oven.
Yes. Look, they're wonderful inventions. And I think all kitchens should have one. I remember when microwaves, I mean, that's an old one. I remember when microwaves came out and they were basically these lumps of steel that you put on your kitchen counter. And obviously a lot of people worried about radiation and, you know, everything else that happens. But today it's just a standard piece of equipment in a kitchen. Air fryer is going to be exactly the same thing going forward. So, okay, Black Friday, obviously a great holiday and obviously where a lot of retailers make a lot of money pretty quickly. Without Black Friday, you know, the numbers for some retailers actually look quite anemic. And then you have Black Friday that comes in, and that is just a serious, serious point of retail. South Africa has obviously on this bandwagon as well. I mean, I remember, a couple of years ago, there was no Black Friday. Today, Black Friday is a massive issue. I try to get around Johannesburg, the greater part of Johannesburg, on Friday. It was pretty tough. I mean, it was just lots and lots of shoppers around. You couldn't get near shopping centers. It was, you know, it was a lot of people shopping. And with inflation in South Africa, you know, running at 5.9% year on year now, and that was that is up from 5.4% in September. You kind of would have thought by yourself, you know, in the economy battling and all the other stuff that's happening in South Africa, perhaps people don't have money, but clearly people do.
Well, we're getting on to this inflation question because, you know, the inflation print came out a little bit hotter than anticipated at 5.9% last week. In the newsletter, I do give a bit of a breakdown in terms of what made up that inflation number. Sort of drilling down into it, and I have put an excerpt of it in there. There are some odd things that sort of jump. You know, Brussels sprouts have gone up 32%.
Gosh, thank goodness I don't eat those.
Yes. But, you know, why on earth would Brussels sprouts and, you know, there's some really odd things in there. Yes, we understand eggs have been hammered by an avian flu. You can understand that. Vegetable oil went through the roof. You know, you have to wonder whether there isn't a bit of profit taking that's going on there, you know, sort of making up for some lost time. I think we're also seeing this in the aviation industry. Despite the fact that, you know, the price of fuel isn't that high, you aren't seeing the pre-pandemic low airfares that you saw, because those airlines are having to make up for the pandemic years when they lost a lot of money. So
there's less competition, right?
Yes.
There's less competition now in the aviation industry in South Africa. You know, I remember, you know, plane tickets used to be incredibly cheap. So today there's much less competition. Today you pay up for the seats more so because it just isn't that proliferation of different competitors in the market. And it's very, very interesting because in the local airline industry, the smallest player amongst the lot, which is SAF Air, was actually the latecomer in the low-cost carrier space. Mango and Kulula with British Airways, the tie-up with British Airways, those were the front runners. Those were the much, much bigger competitors. SAF Air came in as the smallest competitor, and it took a crisis like COVID to wipe the rest of them out and to give SAF Air literally the market share on a platter. So SAF Air today really has the market share. It's for them to lose at the end of the day. It's for everybody else to try and gain this market share back. And I mean, it happened at the same time when SAA was going through its issues, and it still is. And they gave their market share to SAF Air almost on a platter. So it shows you, right place, right time, you can do some amazing things, Dawn.
Bobby, this week you write a very interesting Econofinance article there about Argentina. Do you want to just go into that in more detail? And this isn't just a bash against socialism, because you know us better than that. There are some significant economic implications of what the new president is trying to do.
Yeah, so the new president to be in Argentina is called Javier Milei. Now, Javier Milei, if you see a picture of him, he looks like a rock star. And that is because he actually plays in a rock band, or he used to play in a rock band. He is a free market thinker in Argentina. Now, just to give you an indication of where Argentina has been, post the First World War, Argentina was actually one of the top 10 wealthiest nations in the world. So that's amazing, right? As a South American entity, this was top 10 wealthiest nations in the world. Today, this economy struggles with inflation running at 142%. South Africa, just to give you an indication again there, runs at 5.9%. This is at 142%. The currency has basically been obliterated against the US dollar. So it becomes very, very difficult for the average Argentinian to firstly live in Argentina and to stay alive. So most people today that make money in Argentina is either exporting a product, or they have foreign capital that they're bringing into the country in order to stay alive. Now, how did they get to this point? Well, really speaking, it's socialism. You might remember the movie Perón. I don't know if you remember that. It's actually based upon an individual. So if you go back in time into the history of Argentina, you'll see that one of their largest experiments has been due to a man called Juan Perón. He was a very left-wing populist and really ruled Argentina for quite a while and tried to move the country to a much more socialistic welfare type situation. That sounds like South Africa, because suddenly you're trying to look after the many and you're trying to just distribute wealth on a continuous basis. This is obviously a place which becomes rife with corruption. You're starting to look after the few in power in order to try and achieve this. And then slowly you have this dismantling of an economy over time. And today, Argentina is living with the after effects of much of that. As a matter of fact, Javier Milei gets interviewed, and if you can watch the interview, you're welcome to do so. You can go onto YouTube and watch this. But this is where an American writer and commentator by the name of Tucker Carlson interviews him and asks him about the state of Argentina. And one of the things that Tucker points out is, listen, I walk through downtown in a big city, in Argentina, and what I see is beautiful architecture, but there's everything is just so absolutely run down. Now, that might remind you of, say, cities in South Africa, where you might be walking around and saying, but there's fragmentation in these big cities. And really speaking, it's because a city and a country has lost their direction. Now, Javier is a free market thinker, quite frankly, and through and through. As a matter of fact, as far leaning left as what Jean Perron was, he is far right-wing thinker. So far right. He wants to deregulate the markets. He wants to privatize state-owned entities. Why? He says, because the corruption is just incredible in state-owned entities. You will never fix them. Privatize them. And then he wants to obviously adopt the US dollar. He's saying, adopt the US dollar, get rid of our central banks, because quite frankly, it's superfluous. Argentinian peso is a useless currency. Nobody wants to own the thing in any case. And we've defaulted so many times on our bonds issuance. It's a basket. It's an absolute basket case. Now, it has parallels to South Africa, because this is the thing South Africa is flirting with. And I think this is why the elections that are coming up in South Africa is just so incredibly important. I think we are not living the true effects of a socialistic state, but our political ideology continues to flirt with this through the National Democratic Revolution that the ruling party continuously is trying to push the agenda for. At some point, much of this breaks the system to a point where you can no longer fix it. And then, quite frankly, the only other options is that you have to privatize it. I hope we don't get to that point. And that is why the next elections are important. And quite frankly, the elections thereafter becomes equally important. So good for Javier Milei. I say in the newsletter that I hope he's got friends in the West, which I think he does, because this transition from left-leaning to right-leaning is going to be a transition that some people are not going to find comfortable, especially the average guy on the street. The average guy on the street is not going to find this comfortable. It's going to be a tough transition. But if he's got friends in the West, they might just smooth the road, so to speak. And it's just interesting to see that Argentina is here. For decades, they've been so left-leaning. Now they're right-leaning. It's just interesting to see that they're actually in that place.
I think the interesting thing here is the Republicans have become so far right. Tucker Carlson's big buddy is Donald Trump, right?
Yes.
And, you know, Donald Trump with the QAnon and all of that malarkey that went on a couple of years back is symptomatic of where the right is in the US, which is not a great place to be. So the far right that Javier is looking at is probably nearer to the center, because, you know, he isn't. I mean, if you start looking at some of the far right in Europe, he's not going that far right. It's an interesting space that he's building for himself there. And it'd be very interesting for us to see whether something like this could work here.
So, in South America, Argentina is the basket case. They've been written off so many times. I think their biggest export is soccer players. You know, so, you know, if you want to make something of your life, become a soccer player, go play in Europe and make money. But this thing's not going to work for you to live in Argentina. Under Javier Milei, things could change rapidly. And that's why I say to the average South African, if you think things can't change, if they've changed in Argentina, they can change here. You might not believe it, and it might take time. But at some point, either circumstance or mindset forces that behavior. And it'll be interesting. I end off the newsletter this week by saying perhaps the ANC should invite Mr. Milei over for a state visit. I'd like to be a fly on the wall, because he's a pretty passionate guy, you know. And when he gets going, you know, he doesn't stop for anything. He says it what it is. He calls his opponents parasites and thieves and various other things. I'd love to be a fly on the wall. I mean, I'd love to be part of that state visit. I mean, just to watch it would be absolutely amazing. Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for week number 47. This is the podcast based upon our newsletter. And head over to our newsletter or get in touch and chat to us about anything you might have found interesting. Cheers for now. Kirby and Dawn.